second time in the flesh that the board meeting members have been together, the new board, with 14 now members, five of whom represent the victors in the lawsuit, the plaintiffs, which tried to get power away from the old board, four of whom represent the old board, and five of whom represent the local advisory boards. And those five now generally line up with the majority. Only one member of the dissident board showed up for this. That's Marion Barry from Washington, D.C., but there are still three others technically on the board. And as I mentioned earlier, there's only one thing that's come to a vote here about getting a volunteer treasurer controller to help us with our finances. But there's a great deal else that's being thrashed out. And joining me this hour and helping with the telephone calls a little later on, we'll open our phones, of course, again for most of this hour, are Dan Coughlin, who is the acting executive director, and Verna Avery Brown, who is the acting assistant executive director. Welcome, both of you, to Sunday Salon.
Good morning, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
I think we should begin by, since a lot of our listeners, especially here in Los Angeles and in Washington, D.C., don't know, first of all, Verna, why they didn't hear your voice for so long, and whatever happened to Dan Coughlin, because the network was censored and no discussion of this was allowed. What happened to you? Dan, you were the news director of Pacifica Network News back in 1999 when all of the protests against what Pacifica was trying to do in centralizing power and disenfranchising local stations was going on. This was being covered by every news media in Northern California, certainly every news media in California, nationally, internationally. You tried to get a very brief story about it on the Pacifica Network News. What happened to you?
Larry, this was a serious issue for many of us at Pacifica, how we covered the unfolding events in the summer and spring of 1999 at KPFA, when we had pressure from senior managers and the national board itself not to cover the story on the one hand, but on the other hand, we had the reality that as we looked at the Associated Press wire, there were stories on what was happening at KPFA. So we felt that we couldn't be an ostrich and stick our head in the sand and ignore what was happening because our very legitimacy and credibility as a news organization was at stake. And as the events unfold in the summer of 1999, 15,000 or 10 to 15,000 people hitting the streets of the East Bay in the largest demonstration there since the Vietnam War, and the situation, obviously the crisis escalated, we began covering it better and better, seeking to try to cover the story, but eventually we ran into the attempts by the board at the time and senior management to kill the story. Finally, things came to a head for me personally as the news director at the end of October, where, in fact, I was removed for airing a 30-second piece just talking about an affiliate's boycott of Pacifica, which I felt was important to mention because, again, it's a news credibility.
Yes.
Verna, and you were, of course, with a recognizable signature anchor voice, and I had the great honor and privilege of working with you many years when I was national affairs correspondent. We did a lot of interviews back and forth, introductions to stories. Always Verna had a smile and a hug in the morning, and it's not easy in the news business to have that. A wonderful soul. So, and from one day to the next, your voice was gone.
That's right, Larry. And because I felt that my voice was a signature voice and that many of our listeners associated a certain degree of, I hope, integrity and commitment with my voice, I felt it was important that I not continue in that capacity if I didn't personally have the commitment to do so. And the actions that were taking place at the time, when I met Dan Coughlin on the sidewalk leaving the building, as I was going in, I said, "Dan, where are you going?" And I said, "Work is that way." And he said, you know, he explained to me that he had received an email demoting him from his position as news director. And I was just stunned, to say the least. And so I went into the office and had a brief conversation with Mark Beavis, who informed me that he was going to be performing in that capacity. And that further exacerbated the situation because at the time I just was not the least bit interested in working in that capacity with Mark Beavis as the news director, given many battles we had had over programming to that point heretofore. So I made the difficult decision at that point to really consider continuing to be the anchor for that newscast. And after further discussions, Amy Goodman and I tried to meet with Mary Frances Berry and Lynn Chadwick on a number of occasions, and eventually they shut down communications with us. And so at that point, and actually we tried to meet with several of the board members as well. We did meet with many of them. They put up a wall of communication. It was obvious they were not going to move in the direction of doing anything significant. They weren't hearing us. We were saying, look, you cannot allow the news to drift into this sort of mainstream, milquetoast, you know, pablum-type news that they're trying to produce. And they didn't want to take a stand on that or take any actions that we felt would have prevented that from happening. And so at that point, I decided that I would have to leave. So I resigned.
A number of us, I was one of the original 44, I think it was, then took the step of saying we would no longer collaborate with Pacifica Network News as freelancers, and I had been on Pacifica Network News for years. At that point, I had come back to KPFA as a volunteer programmer after being fired twice. And the 44 of us went on to found Free Speech Radio News, which is one of the really positive things to have come out of all this turmoil. And Verna, you came back to anchor that. Free Speech Radio News, as of a couple of weeks ago, but when Pacifica Network News finally went off the air because we didn't have the money to pay for it anymore, thanks to the old board, and very few stations were taking it. Free Speech Radio News was on, I believe, 51 stations. Pacifica Network News, only 12. And we, in Free Speech Radio News, were and are dedicated to the fundamental principles of what Pacifica should have and could have been doing and someday will again. I want to fast forward a little to your reports, both of your reports that you gave here Friday night, about what's going on in the organization. You've only been in your post for what? 6 weeks, 2 months now, something like that?
Approximately.
Yeah. Look at this one. What date is it?
Seems like 2 years.
And your reports were, I think, to a lot of people who didn't know the fact you brought out, pretty horrific about what you discovered in taking over what records there were inside Pacifica. Talk about that a little bit, if you would, Dan and Verna.
Well, you know, we're trying to move forward and keep our eyes on the prize, which is saving the network financially, Larry. But in order to do that, you have to find out a little bit about what happened in the past, because that is shackling us to a large degree. One thing we discovered, as the board knows, is that there was this vast spending spree that happened in a period of 15 months where the organization's leaders spent $6 million in 15 months, completely unaccounted for, not budgeted for, no financial controls, no oversight from the board. They just went crazy. And this is not just on the millions of dollars spent on exorbitant legal fees, which Verna might give you a better idea in a moment, but rather on, for instance, travel expenses. One top executive spent $120,000 on travel expenses in just 6 months last year. In a six-month period, spending $120,000 on travel.
You can buy a plane for that, can't you?
Yeah. There was other things. When we talked a little bit about discovering a whole series of golden parachutes that were handed out to top executives, year salaries, without any relationship whatsoever to professional standards, but huge packages totaling some $500,000 to the organization that were handed out to senior executives. Another top executive took a car, absconded with a rental car, and we had to call the police to get it back. In addition, Larry, I have to tell you also, we were really shocked to find that Pacifica apparently committed hundreds of thousands of listener dollars on an undercover intelligence operation targeting Pacifica staffers and listeners. Secret dossiers were apparently created on programmers like Amy Goodman, on board members like Board Chair Leslie Kagan, and on listener activists. As far as we understand, undercover agents were sent to spy on local advisory board meetings and on community events.
Do we have now? This is a key question, of course, and it came up Friday night. Do we have that documentation? Do they know what they were looking for as far on us? Do we know what they were looking for?
Well, not yet, Larry, but I guarantee you we will have that product before we pay a dime to this company.
How much do we owe that company?
We owe that company...
$210,000, $215,000, I think.
That's correct.
Now, let's just be real here. If there was a lawsuit, and there were lawsuits, and if they did eventually go to trial, and Pacific had hired, what, three, four, five top dollar, $400 Washington law firms to do their work for them, isn't it, quote, normal, unquote, for law firms like that to subcontract to security firms to get dirt on people so that if I got up there on the stand for some reason, the first thing they would try to throw me off with is, are you the same Larry Bensky that was active with the Black Panther Party in the late 60s? Did you work with the French Communist Party against the Vietnam War? You know, things like that. Just to, isn't that just normal kind of background research they do to try to get what they think is dirt on people?
This is not normal. There is a normal legal research that is conducted in the ordinary course of preparing for your defense against a lawsuit. Remember, these are technical lawsuits about the board's governance, not about what individual people are doing. And why are you using the resources of the organization to spy on your own staff, to spy on a local advisory board meeting?
Right.
Why
don't
you could just go to the local advisory? They're open public meetings.
I got news for you. They probably did some.
So you're talking about a level, and many people said this at the time. There was a siege mentality, a kind of Nixonian paranoia that gripped the former administration in all aspects of its operations and business dealings. And this is the reflection of that, where they hired and spent hundreds or committed hundreds of thousands of dollars of listeners' money on an undercover intelligence operation that had no relationship, as far as we can tell at this point, to, in fact, the normal course of legal research.
And this wasn't just hiring a law firm or two to represent you in a major battle, because, okay, common sense would tell you if you're in a court battle, you're going to have to hire a qualified law firm. We're talking about hiring. At one point, there were as many as five law firms hired by the Pacifica Foundation to represent in the summer of July 2000. And five firms at one time, simultaneously. This is unheard of. I don't know what the campaign was doing at that particular time, but clearly the heat was on for them to have hired five law firms. There was a total, the aggregate was about $2.5 million. That was including, of course, nine law firms, which were hired over the 15-month period. And, you know, that's practically unheard of. You're talking about things like firms like Mitchell, Silverberg, and Knupp, $296,000. Epstein, Becker, and Green, $557,000 and some change.
That's just what they're owed. I understand Epstein, Becker, and Green was already paid $700,000.
They've already been paid some money. This is what the balance is that they're claiming that we owe them. Wendell, Rosen, Black, and Dean, $34,000. Garvey, Schubert, and Barr, $52,000 and some change.
All of these are on the auditor's report, which is posted on the website. These are no secret. People who are out there who want to see the ghastly details can log on to either www.pacifica.org and look for the February 9th auditor's report, or www.savepacifica.net. You'll see a lot of stuff, including the complete text and line items that Bern is talking about. We want to open the phone shortly, but before we do, we want to get to something more positive from both of you. I know you travel around the country trying to take the temperature of these stations. I mentioned earlier that record-breaking fundraisers were held recently in Los Angeles, in Northern California, and in New York. Washington did very well, too. Houston's about to start. What's your assessment, Verna, as you go around the country of the inside? Of course, a lot of damage has been done, but of where we are in the rebuilding of this network.
This is really a very exciting chapter in Pacifica's history, notwithstanding that we're in the middle of a financial crisis. It's exciting because I think people are getting the message, our staff, our volunteers, our programmers, and now as recently as February 28th when we had our national show, they're getting the message that Pacifica has been restored to those who want to really see this network fulfill the mission that it was intended to fulfill. And there's a new energy in most of the stations, and just about, I haven't personally been to the Houston station yet, but I anticipate going there shortly. But all of the other stations, the volunteers are saying, you know, we haven't been inside these buildings for years. The programmers are, you know, they're meeting with the programmers, the labs are coming in, and they're coalescing to develop strategy and move forward. I think it's really exciting. People understand we're moving forward, even though we're in the midst of a financial crisis.
Our telephone number is 1-800-958-9008. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. of A. 1-800-958-9008. Dan, your assessment of where we're at as you spend 24/7.
Well, Larry, I think you hit it on the head. Pacifica had its best ever fundraising drive in its history. And that was a remarkable achievement just this past winter, where the stations raised $3 million. That was a statement by listeners that they're rallying behind the changes that are happening in the network. They support the democratization process. And, Larry, this is one of the most exciting things that is happening. Pacifica Radio will be the first broadcast network in the United States that will be democratically run. And that's happening next year, over this coming year. So I think listeners are responding and rallying, as well as staff. The February 28th National Day of Programming exemplified that new spirit of solidarity that is emerging out of this crisis.
Elaine in Santa Rosa is our first call this hour. Hi, Elaine. Welcome to Sunday Salon.
Hi. I can't believe I'm the first caller. I'm sitting here listening to how you're talking about how they're going to organize the station, and it is very exciting. And I am definitely a contributor and a listener. And this last time around, the question, I have several questions to ask that maybe you could address. Number one, we had a recent news story here up in Santa Rosa. There was a trial in San Francisco around the medical marijuana issue, and I felt like it was like pulling teeth trying to get any of the news people out there to cover. It seemed like I would send emails, there would be barriers, and I just couldn't seem to get through. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, this is public access radio. We're supposed to be a station that rallies people around issues, and yet there was, it's like we made no headway whatsoever. It was very frustrating to me. So my question is, that after I hang up, if you could address, is how is that going to be possible for people to encourage other people in the news area to cover certain stories? And in my feeling, I got the feeling like maybe there's several people that are in control. I don't know if they're volunteers. I don't know how the station runs as far as like yourself. Are you a volunteer? Are the people in the newsroom of volunteers? If they are, where in God's name do they get their money that they could put in so much time on a volunteer basis? And then the other.
Well, I don't know. I think we'll just stay with that one question if it's okay with you, because it's going to take a little bit of time to get into this. All three of us have spent an aggregate of dozens of years in newsrooms. And this is a very, very serious question, not only at KPFA, but everywhere in Pacifica. How do you decide what among the many myriad things you could cover every day you cover, and who gets to make those decisions? And how do you democratize that and have your ears as wide open as possible? When the three of us were working together in Washington, we'd come in at, 8:30 in the morning, and we'd have an option. You know, there are probably 40 events on the average day book in Washington. You get, you know, maybe 100 faxes and emails overnight. Mm-hmm. The phones are ringing off the hook. You have a half-hour newscast with a staff of maybe three reporters and a couple of other producers.
And that was the national office.
And that was the national office.
That's right.
We don't even have news departments in two of our stations right now, in Washington, D.C. and Houston, Texas. And the one down here in Los Angeles is severely in need of rebuilding.
Well, the one in Washington is a skeletal staff.
It's rip and read. It's not a real news gathering organization. So this is a question, Dan, that comes up, and Verna, that comes up over and over again.
Right. It's a bit looking like the heavens above, and you see the stars, and how do you make sense of it? And that's why we need a vision about how we approach news. And to inform our decisions, just like you can look up at the stars and, you know, get a constellation, and that's what we or envisage or map out what is happening in the heavens. And the same way, in the newsroom, you have to have a clear vision about what it is that you're trying to achieve and how you go about doing that. I would just recommend to anybody, we've been producers, Larry, Verna, and I, and we know the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Just keep plugging away. You got to keep in mind that there are literally hundreds of stories happening every day, and news staff have to make judgments. They get, you know, hundreds of calls, hundreds of faxes, hundreds of emails, and you just have to keep plugging away at these stories that you care about.
That's right, and they do have to set some priorities. But I will say that as we move into this next chapter of Pacifica's history, one of the things that we are going to do is have our news departments really make a recommitment to making progressive stories and events in our local communities a priority in their coverage, so that we can, and I think that by bringing more lab cooperation and assistance into the stations, we can try and expand our reach and our ability to cover these events.
Carol in Orange County, thank you for joining us on Sunday Salon on Pacifica.
Hi. Oh, I'm so happy to be on, and I'll try to be fast. I'm a listener, contributor, and so hopeful for the future for you, for all of us. I do have a couple of really quick questions. Hopefully you can answer. If possible, do you have any understanding of why Saul Lando left? And is it because of his association with The Nation magazine?
Okay, let me just answer that one by telling you that you, I don't know if you do the web, but go to a library if you don't have it.
No, I don't have a computer.
Okay, go to a library. There are plenty of them in Orange County. Log on to www.savepacifica.net. Look in the upper right-hand column. Saul Landau has a lengthy statement, and it's answered by Edward Herman, and I think you'll find it illuminating.
Probably the next most important thing for me is, as a listener, I'm a little confused about the money situation. I'm not sure how much KPFK made. It seems more than I thought. And also what we owe and what will go, you know, what you're going to spend that money on, what will be for the debt and what will be for the station and the programming.
Good question. I can tell you the answer to the first. The total that I saw on the wall when I was over there last night was $719,000. Now, this is... The previous record was $534,000, and this was, the only limitation in fundraising here, and I was here for one of the days of the fundraiser and up in Northern California where I ordinarily live, was the number of telephones we had to answer. We had 12, 15 phones. Many times you couldn't get a call through, and if people don't get their call answered when they call two, three times, they give up. If we'd had 40 or 50 phone lines, I'm sure we would have made over $1 million in both these signal areas. People were overwhelmingly supportive. But as to the answer to your second question, Dan and Verna will have to take that.
Yeah, that's why what we're doing is, as you've heard, we're sealing off the old debt, so to speak. We're fencing it off into another category and, in fact, engaging in a process with the big creditors from the past to discuss about what exactly we owe them and what kind of payment schedule we can be on. So for the time being, the money that you're giving to your local stations, KPFK and Southern California, or KPFA in Northern California, or WBAI in the tri-state New York area, is going to the operations of those stations. Mm-hmm. So that's important to keep in mind.
There's one possible exception, or rather a unique situation would have been February 28th when we had our Save Our Signal Day, which was designed for KPFK, but of course all of the Pacifica stations participated in that. So you have listeners throughout the country from areas where other sister stations exist, contributing to the repair and maintenance of the KPFK signal.
Craig in Mid Pines, California, thanks for joining us. By the way, our telephone number is 1-800-958-9008. You're with Verna Avery Brown and Dan Coughlin, interim Executive Director and Assistant Executive Director of Pacifica here in Los Angeles. Hi, Craig.
Hi. Hey, it's just so great to have Dan and Verna back and on the air, and so wonderful to know that this broadcast is going out to all five stations. God, it's
well, it isn't. It's going to 4 out of 5, but it's close.
Well, anyway, close enough. Yeah, you get the idea.
Thank you, Craig.
Yes. I basically want to talk about a couple of things relating to listener involvement in keeping Pacifica on track. One just very quick little story and then a suggestion. A little while back, you were discussing what happened when Dan Coughlin tried to report on the response to the crisis at KPFA, and he got canned, and the steps that were taken in response to that. And part of the story at that time was thanks to the email listservs, and I strongly urge people who want to get involved, don't just go to the website, but find out how to get onto the email listservs. I've been off them for a while, and I'm really... It's kind of like going cold turkey, but anyway, at that time, back in 99, when this crisis got ratcheted up by Dan Coughlin being canned, there was a tremendous outpouring of response via email that was directed at the Pacifica National Office. I think it really rocked them back on their heels and put them on notice that this crisis was going national and we meant business.
Craig, could you get to the question pretty soon? Because we got a lot of callers waiting.
Yeah, and I don't know how aware, I know a lot of these were CC'd to Dan and Verna. I don't know how aware you were of that listener response and how that, you know, factored into the overall development of the crisis or of the response. But anyway, it's something for the historians to look into. Here's what I want to suggest. I know that it's not legally possible, by my understanding, you know, of FCC regs, et cetera, for a radio station to literally hand over control of its programming to anybody outside the station. But to the degree it's possible effectively to do that, I think it's important at each of the stations that they be mandated to have what would amount to listener-controlled blocks of time, at least an hour, a week, or a month, or whatever seems appropriate, so that... this can never happen again. So there will always be this avenue.
What would be on that hour, Craig? What would be broadcast during that hour that would avoid this ever happening
in
again?
In each of the station areas, and obviously they would play a role in shaping the format of these hours. But it would be to discuss issues that arise.
Well, thank you for that suggestion. I think something like that, of course, local advisory board reports and reports from managers on a more frequent basis and call-in shows are being talked about throughout the network. I think we have to remember here, being realistic, that the two KPFA board elections that we've had so far for the local advisory board, the first one a year and a half ago and the other just a few months ago, we had a 23% participation of eligible subscribers in the first and a 15% participation in the second. I regarded that personally as underwhelming, and I think we really need to take a close look at why we don't have more people. Now, you could say they didn't know enough about it, maybe it wasn't stressed enough on the station, but, you know, I heard it all the time. I heard the candidates, I heard announcements, please vote. It was easy to vote. You could vote online, you could mail in ballots, you could do a lot of things. And we still did not have a huge participation. And I think just like you can't criticize what goes on nationally in this country as far as electoralism goes and the lack of participation, and at the same time say, but here we are and 15% of us are voting and therefore we have a democracy. Is either of you as concerned about that as I am?
That's a very serious issue, and I think the board is well aware of that, and many listener activist groups are as well, and I think that's a key issue to try to figure out as we move forward over the next year.
I just wanted to make one point in response to Craig's comment. I'm not certain that a listener group such as he suggested, having input into an hour on the show, would have prevented the crisis that we had in terms of management. You may recall that there was actually a gag rule in place that, and so in many, or at least in one of the listener stations, one of the sister stations, WPFW in Washington, there are listeners there to this day that have no idea what actually happened because of the role that management played in terms of preventing news from going out. The national news was actually edited to pull out segments that were addressing the crisis, the situation that was taking place out of KPFA in that summer. And so having that hour on would not necessarily have precluded this from happening if you've got managers in place that are
censoring the hour.
Yeah, censoring it.
Chris in Oakland's our next caller. Chris, thanks for joining us on Sunday Salon.
Hi, Larry. Verna, that's a great segue for my question.
Happy to be of service.
Please answer this now or act on answering this to the community at large in the future, but Mary Frances Berry, Pat Scott, Ms. Wash, we all wonder what they wanted, why they acted the way they did, who was advising them, what were their hopes, why were they motivated to act so harshly towards the network, where did they want the network to go? There's conspiracy theories that I have myself, of course, but now that we're in charge, information like this coming out would be so helpful to understand why this all happened. Do you have solid ideas why they were doing this, or
would
we be able to learn that in the future?
I think you left out a name. You forgot Lynn Chadwick. And I would have to either have a crystal ball or be able to climb into their head to find out what their motives were. And it's a scary place. I'm not sure I'd really want to go there. But I don't know that anything like that could ever be determined.
But,
there's
know,
so much speculation.
Doesn't it say something, though, that
I think
we...
There's four different answers for, you know, each one of these.
But doesn't it say something? I mean, when you ask us, where do we want Pacifica to go? We know where we want Pacifica to go. We have a mission statement. We have a tradition. We have ways that we do our broadcast. We have things we want to do. Doesn't it tell you everything that you're not able to figure out what the hell it was they were all up to, even though they were all up to something that they weren't able to state it clearly and at least debate it and try to sell it to people? How much did they pay for that PR firm that we supposedly owed? I mean, what does it tell you that they weren't able to communicate that effectively?
Mm-hmm.
Sherry in New York, thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Hi,
I'm
Sherry.
Larry Bensky. I'm really glad to hear you on the air.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on the air.
I'm sorry, I'm getting an echo.
You have your radio on?
Eurocentric is a swear word on the Pacifica Network, but I wanted to argue for a certain kind of coverage of Europe. The really serious counterweight to American power is the European Union. And just to give you two examples, opposition to missile defense and probably in the future Bush's nuclear policy and attempts to work actually positively, concretely, with the crisis in Israel and Palestine are coming out of Europe, not here. And in Europe, there are left groups in parliaments, in government. So we need to know what people in Europe are doing on progressive issues, on issues that we can seem to tackle by exerting pressure on our own Congress or on the President. And there's been almost no coverage of Europe except for the war in Yugoslavia. So I'd like to argue for coverage that's as regular of the European Union and the left politics in the EU as on the Middle East and Central and South America and so on.
Thank you, Sherry. We're going to move on to RC in Florida, who's listening on the Internet. Hi, RC.
How you doing?
Good.
I am concerned about the idea of this is the war. This
about
is
what?
The war we're in. And it seems to be, you can't even say the L word. You know, I'm nervous. This is a first time caller.
That's okay, but what war are you referring to, RC?
Liberal. You can't say it.
You can't say liberal? I just said it. Dan, you say it. Go ahead. You try. Go ahead. Now, Dan can't say it. You're right. He can't say it. What do you mean you can't say liberal? What is missing from the dialogue, RC? What would you like to hear more of?
More anger.
More anger.
Vigilance. More attacks on the right. More people coming out against religion, against the power, against everything that this government is involved with and who they are. Dick Cheney. Bush.
Is it possible for you to move to Berkeley and listen to KPFA full time? Because I think you'll hear your fill of that. I, Let's go on to another call because we've got a lot of people waiting. Vanessa in Montclair, New Jersey. By the way, our telephone number is 1-800-958-9008. Hi, Vanessa.
Hi, how you doing? I really like what I'm hearing, but I haven't heard anyone ask this question, and I'm hoping maybe someone there can answer for me. With everything that was going on at WBAI during the coup and after, has anyone said anything or know anything about bringing charges against the people? I can't even say their names, but you know who I'm speaking of.
Mm. Well, I mean, a lot of the behavior that took place was clearly in the category of despicable, I think, in most people's minds. And it probably I think most people will agree there was some gross negligence. Gross mismanagement involved, but whether or not it actually crosses over into the arena of criminal activity is another thing. And so I think that, you know, at this point, we're meeting with our lawyers. They're reviewing every situation independently to determine if that is in fact, you know, a cause that we would want to move forward on. But at this point, we've not really pursued that.
Okay, because I'm hearing about all this money that they spent, and it's like really outrageous. And some of it is listeners' money. I have a friend who donated money, and to this day, she's waiting for her product that she, you know, donated for.
Premium, yeah.
You know, and I don't know.
One thing that we can do is this, is we need to find out what happened exactly in the past in order to prevent it from happening again in the future. And that's the key point here. That's why we're really raising the past. I'm not so sure Pacifica will necessarily throw good money after bad, so to speak, and try to prosecute past individuals, even if there was some indication that, you know, there was serious problems. We need to look to the future, and in order to do that, we need to understand the past so it can give us an idea of what steps we can take to prevent this from ever happening again.
Ray in San Francisco is our next caller at 1-800-958-9008 with Dan Coughlin, Verna Avery Brown, and myself, Larry Bensky. Hi, Ray.
Hi. Hey, it may be hard anymore to find an accountant who does known shares in Shredco, but hopefully we'll find somebody who can spare a few hours to work on this. But, you know, it may be true that we'll never be able to put the record together on what happened, and maybe some of it will have gone over the line and be criminal activity. Maybe when people conspire to suppress people's freedom of speech, it might be criminal activity. But questions like this, which we can argue out and hopefully will, still, there is this other area that I was hoping we could address, which is when you have a foundation where people actually gain money from the sale of the stations and put it into an endowment. That might be arguable about whether that's good management or not, but what happens to those big broker fees that somebody pockets when that happens? And also, when you have an organization such as Pacifica, and one of the directors is a principal in a law firm that gets millions of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars from that foundation, aren't there usually rules about conflict of interest, and don't we see some of that in this case?
Well, I can respond to that. You're referring to the relationship between John Murdoch, the former board member, the former national board member John Murdoch, and Epstein, Becker, and Green, and we have our attorneys looking into that matter. However, I will say at this point, what they've determined is that if there was full disclosure, and there was in this case, it's unlikely that there would be a conflict of interest. But let me just also offer this caveat. They have not closed the book on that relationship, so they're continuing to look, but those are the initial indications that we're getting.
Linda in Venice, California, thanks for joining us.
Hi, I have a suggestion for what I think is becoming the Radiogate files, the covert information gathering on the various people involved with the Pacifica.
Go ahead. We're anxiously awaiting the suggestion.
I think they should be. I think it is an amazing historical, cultural document. And just like other documents, they could be auctioned at Butterfield's or Christie's or Sotheby's. And I think the minimum price could be face value, $250,000 or perhaps $300,000. And I think it would raise an enormous sum of money, and I think it would be a wonderful way to pay for this.
What if it's full of lies and distortions, as such intelligence investigations tend to be?
There has to be some sex in there, too.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I don't think we can prove it.
I don't know about you, Verna, but I don't think they get much out of selling my file in that area. Tommy in Los Angeles, thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Larry. I miss you on Living Room, and I haven't called in a while. This is a question for Mr. Coughlin. My name's Tommy. I'm a baker, and I'm a member of the Baker and Confectioners Union, and I have... brother union members in the AFTRA local. So I want to ask this question directly to Mr. Coughlin. You had said that the reason you were fired was over censorship issues, when in fact, sir, it has been written in The Nation and in other publications that there were labor grievances filed against you when you were the news director, specifically involving a headlines editor named Laura Iyama. You have very deftly managed to escape discussing that, and the fact that you were not particularly well-liked by AFTRA union members of Pacifica Network News during your entire time as the Pacifica campaign poster boy for censorship martyrdom. And so since we're also talking about full disclosure, I'd like you to talk, A, about the grievance that Ms. Yama and her shop steward had filed against you, my union brothers and sisters, and B, since we're talking about settlements and transparency and full disclosure, was it true that there was some kind of legal settlement that the Pacifica Radio Network paid to you after you were dismissed or left? And did not that disclosure have some kind of a statement about you not getting involved or something like that? But I'd like you really to discuss the Eon.
Okay, let him to discuss it. Tommy, you said it twice. Now, let him
answer. Got a lot of questions
and
there.
And I want to mention something about AFTRA also myself.
Yeah,
I would too.
First of all, the majority of AFTRA members in the Pacifica National Programming Shop did protest my removal. There wasn't grievances. There was one grievance which had to do with a reporter who was filing late. And another reporter actually complained about that to me, and normal procedures were followed absolutely scrupulously. The issue was put to bed. I am an AFTRA member myself in good standing. I have a good relationship, in fact, to this day with the entire AFTRA leadership. What this has been really all about is a minority of members trying to throw mud at me personally and others to try to obscure an egregious act that occurred, which was the act of blatant censorship, and it's part of the mudslinging that has happened over the last several years. But it's completely false. Larry and Verna, both AFTRA members, could talk about that too. And in fact, what happened really was that the whole situation there got deeply politicized and completely corrupted.
My experience with AFTRA couldn't have been more negative. When I was fired, supposedly for speaking out and violating a non-existent gag rule, which I'd never seen and never been shown and never signed and, in fact, never existed, and he never could prove that it existed, my AFTRA union representative told me I had no mediation rights, no arbitration rights, and that he would not represent me in any way in any legal proceedings that I might choose to bring against the foundation, which I did. I was basically cut loose, and not only that, but afterwards I was backstabbed by the AFTRA union, which not only didn't support me, but went around when I finally did file suit against Pacifica and provided, without even being required to, a fallacious statement about what they had offered me. I consider AFTRA to be the enemy of myself as a worker, and I'm proud to say that I'm now in the Communications Workers of America local at KPFA, which represented its members much, much better in this entire matter with Pacifica than AFTRA even began to in my case. Mm. Verna, did you want to say something?
I just wanted to sort of reiterate something that Dan said. It truly was a political maneuver on the part of that shop in Washington, D.C., of which I was a part of. And it was all linked to the dynamics that were in play at that time to try and gain control of the newsroom. The particular individual that our caller mentioned, and I don't really want to call the name, was a very difficult employee that had a history of controversy, not only with Dan Coughlin as the news director, but with several of the previous news directors as well. And so for that individual to be filing a suit was just, it was really a little bit laughable considering And you have to be careful here because you can't get into too many personnel issues and that sort of thing on the air. But I think it's fair to say that it was disingenuous and a false allegation on their part.
Bridget in D.C., thanks for your patience and thanks for your joining us here on Sunday Salon.
Hi. Yes, you know, I'm a fairly new listener here at in Washington, D.C. I listen to WPFW. So a lot of what's being discussed I'm not really that familiar with. So I'm thankful to know that that website exists, and I will go there to get additional information. But I do have two quick questions. One, before I even ask my questions, I think the censoring that took place at the D.C. station was shameful and so contradictory to what a listener-sponsored station should stand for. But my question is, in looking to the future and in moving in the new direction you want Pacifica to go in, how will that affect the music programming at WPFW? That's one question. My other is, who specifically was doing the censoring here at PFW in Washington, D.C.?
Okay. Well, I could respond to the management at the time, I think would be fair to say, was responsible for doing any censorship that took place there. That management has since been replaced with new management. Tony Regusters is the new general manager, interim general manager at WPFW at this time. And in terms of how the music programming would be affected, let me ask you this, Bridget. How would you like to see the movie, the programming affected by this?
Well, again, like I said, I'm a fairly new listener, but I've been very, very pleased with the fact that I can get programming like what Amy Goodman does and a lot of the other talk programs that go on during the day. But I'm also most drawn to the station because of the jazz and the blues and the type of cultural music that's available, because that keeps the culture alive. So that's important to me as well. But I'd like to see some balance. And I was so thankful to see that Amy Goodman was able to come back to PFW. I mean, that's important too.
Well, I think you said the key word, balance. That is precisely what the agenda is of the interim general manager, Tony Regusters. And there's been actually quite a bit of dialogue and discussion around this, and this weekend as well, because it's an issue that some of the other Pacifica stations are dealing with as well.
All of them.
Yeah. It's important to note that the programming at the station should reflect the interests and concerns of the progressive community that it serves. The decisions will be made on the local level. We're not going to do top-down management where the national office dictates to the local station managers what kind of programming they should or shouldn't carry. But with respect to WPFW and jazz, because it's been such a talked-about issue, I think you can be safe in knowing that there will be an integration of more progressive talk into the jazz format. There's a wide appreciation for jazz and as a cultural contribution to that station. And there's been rumors that it would actually be wiped out, but that's absolutely false.
Well, that's
Attila, thank you for calling, Bridget. We have only about 10 minutes left, and we're going to try to get through as many more calls as we can here. Attila in Cotati, California, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to suggest that perhaps CPB, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, I'm concerned about their role, considering where Kunrad is coming from Voice of America, and I kind of see this as at the root of everything and everybody working. It seems like sabotage to me by CPB. Can you guys address that?
Well, I think it's no secret that public broadcasting as a whole has gone through tremendous transformation over the years, especially in the wake of the 1994 Republican Revolution, where, if you remember, Newt Gingrich and company made a big attack upon public broadcasting, specifically their allegation that it was liberal, had a liberal bias. So what we've seen throughout public broadcasting, though, is a real rightward shift in programming, which may indeed have a lot to do with the type of leadership that now is in place at various levels of public broadcasting in the United States. And that is a key issue. Obviously, there is a pressure in Congress, on the Hill, to the CPB to rein in broadcast networks like Pacifica. That was clearly and repeatedly stated time and time again, and I know Larry covered that in depth. So that is an important issue. People have talked about it around the network, and I'm sure the board will be taking that up at some point over the next months ahead.
I would like...
Gina, go ahead.
I just want to say I would like to see Pacifica divorce itself from CPB and not be dependent on it whatsoever.
Well, we're not dependent on it, but we do take $1.5 million, about 10% of the annual budget.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you were listening last hour. I said there are a lot of us who feel that if they're going to continue to put strings on it, it'll go away and our listeners will make up that 10%. But this is a particularly poor time for us to be talking about turning down 1.5.
I can guarantee you we're not going to be severing our ties with them this year.
Let's move on. We got a lot more calls here. Gina in the Bronx, thanks for joining us on Sunday Salon.
Hello, Larry. It's Gino.
Oh, Gino. Sorry.
Yes, it's okay. Good day, Avra. Verna.
Yes, good morning.
Okay, so how about this for an idea? We get one of the top salaried actors out there or somewhere here to tithe some of their money, and maybe you get someone like Quincy Jones orchestrating a bunch of musicians, because we've had over here endorsements from people like Tony Bennett, Rage Against the Machine, so on and so forth. Maybe the thing opens up with a prayer poem by Leonard Pelletier and Numia, and you work on something like that and you put out a CD. And it takes away the threat of this court action possibly popping up where, due to lack of payments, they take away the stations.
Gino, you want to come to Washington? Yeah, how about that for an idea?
There's been a lot of talk about this kind of thing down here in L.A., as you might imagine, La La Land. I've heard a lot of people throwing names around of people who've been sympathetic to the cause and putting together a benefit of these and various benefits. There's one that may happen up in Berkeley on April 14th, which is the day before Pacifica's 53rd anniversary. These are all being considered. The problem is now, the past few years, as I see it, we've had people occupying the post of development director who haven't developed a damn thing except their own salaries. And we need really to get people who know what they're doing and who are dedicated to the organization to put together some real events with the numerous people, as you say, in the entertainment business who have star quality who do support us.
That's right. Larry was referring to the previous management. But we, in fact, we're very excited. I mean, this is the part of the job that I just absolutely love, because this weekend we've been brainstorming a number of programming ideas that our listening audience and supporters will be hearing about over the next week or two. Just some really exciting things, including the type of thing that Gino was talking about. And I think that the February 28th Sailor Signal Day was just the first in a series of programs that you'll be getting from Pacifica that will let our audience know and let the country know, if not the world now that we're on the Internet, just exactly who we are and where we're going as we move into this new century. So thank you very much, Gino. We're taking your suggestions to heart, and believe me, they're being folded in with a number of other very creative ideas.
Peggy in Palo Alto, thanks for joining us.
Hi. I had a question regarding finances. Every board of directors of a nonprofit that I know of carries errors and omissions insurance, and the insurance company is liable to pay for misdeeds of the board members, and I'm wondering if there isn't some money that could be collected from the errors and omissions insurance for the actions of the previous board.
Well, actually, the settlement that took place at the end of this did award damages to the foundation, which we are still in the process of having actually applied to our account.
Joyce in Brooklyn, thanks for joining us.
Hello. Hi. The board meeting isn't airing here in New York City. Why is that? I mean, it's a wonderful program, but I've been listening to the board on WBIX.org, and I was wondering why it wasn't on BAI today.
Well, it was on all day yesterday, and because certain stations had certain programming commitments and the way we were able to work it out and local option, it was decided that we'd do these 2 hours of call-ins today to give people a chance to participate. And as you say, WBIX is broadcasting in the
Yeah, but not everybody has Internet access.
No, not everybody does, and not everybody will listen to a broadcast like this, and there's a lot of negotiations, tractations, and conversations, I can tell you, having been the point person on this one, that have to go on as far as what stations carry what in this organization. It is not an easy and automatic decision. And I can assure you that there are many people yesterday, and I've been getting emails already, you know, of all kinds saying, oh, it was wonderful that you carried this. It was fascinating. Please do more of it. And I get an equal amount saying, why did you preempt my jazz show or my, you know, whatever, blues show?
Yeah, but the board meeting, though, is important. But thank
you
for your response.
To you. By the way, speaking of emails, our address for emails is sundaysalon@kpfa.org. Sunday Salon, that's one word, at kpfa.org. Before we finish here, Dan and Vern, I wanted to make sure our listeners heard about one more thing that came up over the course of the weekend that I think is extremely important. And that is the situation of the Pacifica Program Archives, which are located here in Los Angeles, and have something like 47,000 different programs from over the course of the history of Pacifica. What can you share with our listeners, and I think it's really important for them to know, about the condition of those tapes in that archive and what we're going to do about it?
That's a good question, Larry. The tapes in that archive have been deteriorating over time because they require a tremendous amount of work, both to preserve them, to catalog them. It keeps growing every minute of every day. It is a national treasure, what is in there. I was just walking through last night seeing Langston Hughes, House on American Activities Committee.
Robeson,
you name it. It's in that archive. And I know there is a commitment on the part of the board and in the national office to try to prioritize the archive. Not only try, but we have to. It's a national treasure. It's our responsibility. It's in the trust of Pacifica. We are now working. We have a website up for the PacificaArchive.org, PacificaArchive.org, that scholars, listeners can go to, order tapes, get links to listen to tapes, and that's just the beginning of what we'll hope to be a real development of that treasure.
But I've been told that half the tapes in the archive or more are deteriorating seriously, and if something isn't done about boosting them up, dubbing them, putting them on data, I don't know what the heck you do. I'm not a technology person, but if that's not done, they'll be lost.
Well, one of the programs that we have planned upcoming will involve just that, helping to preserve our national archives, and we'll be getting plans around that in the near future. We realize the imperativeness of getting this done quickly, and so we're going to come up with the money to do that, be it through a grant or through our fundraisers.
Fern Avery Brown and Dan Coughlin, thank you very much for being here. I know you want
thank
to go back
Larry.
To the board meeting.
Thanks, Larry.
The board meeting is being held here in Los Angeles at Virgil Middle School. Those of you who are in L.A., we're at Vermont and First Avenue. We'll be going on for another couple of hours. The results of it will be posted on pacifica.org, www.pacifica.org. As one of our callers mentioned, you can listen to it if you listen to web radio at www.wbix.org, the wonderful website maintained by Errol Maitland and others. Sunday Salon comes to some of you every week at this time, and hopefully more of you on a regular basis. We're still settling that as well. Our producer here today was Esther Manila. Sally Phillips is our producer in Berkeley. Joy Moore is our engineer there. Jim Bennett has overseen everything technologically here, and we thank them all very much. Once again, you can write to us, sundaysalon@kpfa.org. I'm Larry Bensky, back with you next week on some of these same stations, same time. Thanks for all your continuing support.
And you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM Pacifica Radio here in New York. Up next will be the interim national board meeting. We are covering it here on WBAI New York.
Tune to High Five, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
On Wall Street.
Look sharp today, boys, especially you rookies. Next, please, next,
Be wise, be fair, be sure, be there, behave, beware.
You're tuned to High Five, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
Music is a mistake. It's the most noise.